Welcome to CFO Talk. I'm your host, Steve Rosewald, Chief Learning Officer at CFO.University. Joining us today from the quaint hamlet of Glen Head on the north shore of Long Island is John Thackeray. John is an expert in risk management, honing his skills at Deutsche Bank, Citigroup, and Societe Generale before starting Risk Inc. in 2011. Risk Inc. is a boutique risk management firm that develops bulletproof risk documentation for its clients. John holds numerous certificates in risk and his MBA from the Chartered Institute of Bankers. When John isn't working hard for his clients, he's on the golf course or watching a cricket match. Welcome, John. It is a pleasure and not a bit risky to have you on CFO Talk.
Privileged to be here, Steve, and honored to join the debate in risk management, which I'm sure to your viewers is both an interesting and a perplexing topic.
Really, since the pandemic, we've seen much more interest in risk management. And in fact, your articles on CFO.University, your library, are very popular. One in particular, which is the 7 key elements of effective risk management, really popular with our audience. And so that's why I wanted to bring you on today and share your risk management expertise with our audience. And so if it's okay with you, we'll jump right in. You have these 7 elements that you talk about in your article and you highlight them. Can you let the audience know what those 7 key elements are for enterprise risk management?
And I think before answering that question, I think to give some sort of background, I think we really have to understand, why should we do ERM? Why should we do enterprise risk management to start off? I can talk about the components, like anything. What is the benefit? And I think there are 3 benefits in enterprise risk management. There's the alignment benefit. It aligns all the operation, the activities on the organization into a stated goal and a stated objective, understanding the risk. It also operates as a benchmark. So organizations and companies can understand their risk appetite, their risk culture, their risk statement against other companies in that particular field. And then he can deviate or they can accommodate within that type of structure. They don't want to be the outliers. They want to be within. And thirdly, is really visibility. It's called enterprise risk management for a reason. It's enterprise-wide. And therefore, it's visible to all in the company. And I think those are the 3 benefits which really allow enterprise risk management the seeds to grow. It's 7 elements I put in my paper. And these 8 elements is a bit like a cake. We need all these ingredients. We can either make a good cake or a very good cake. It's up to you. But here are the elements that I consider essential. The first thing is business objectives and strategy. You really have to understand what the objective is and what your goal is within the business. Underpinning that is the risk. And risk, ISO 330,000, really state risk is the uncertainty over objectives. So it's already embedded within your business objective and strategy. The second element is risk appetite. What is your appetite for risk? What is your capacity and tolerance? And we can talk up a little bit more in the other questions that you will come up. Thirdly, culture, governance, and taxonomy. Again, you can't be an effective ERM without an appropriate governance structure. It must influence the culture. And with the culture, you must have a common language, which is a risk taxonomy. Now, the fourth element is data and delivery. Data is very important. It's the oil of the engine. I was going to say, using the baking analogy, it's probably the eggs within the cake. That element allows you to make decisions, informed decisions, rather than decisions ad hoc. And so with that data-driven influence, and now we have AI to help us, even more so now, we can make better decisions along the journey. Number five, internal control. A very important element within ERM. We're looking at controls to say how to mitigate risk. We might not entirely mitigate it entirely, but we need the controls to allow us to make sure that the operations move more effectively or can be moved into the more effective status. Measurement and evaluation. Well, like any good program, we need to measure and evaluate how successful and how effective it is. Otherwise, we wouldn't have it. Obviously, coming up with a cake analogy, it's really in the eating. Does it taste good? Does it have the right texture? Does it have a soggy bottom? So that is extremely important in evaluating the effect of the ERM system. And finally, the cream on the cake is the scenario planning. And as I go further into the questions, yes, some firms have it. Some firms can't afford the technique, the staff, the cost, the overruns that go with scenario planning and stress testing. But it's an effective guide. A what-if scenario for a firm, especially if they're multi-product and in multi-geographical regions.
Those are great elements, and now I'm super hungry. So what do I do next? I'm hungry for more information. That was a wonderful summary, John. That was so succinct. It makes so much sense. So thank you for that. And I'm going to take a break and grab a piece of toast right now or something. That's fantastic. You brought up some great points on these elements. One of the things I want to talk about to start with is you mentioned risk appetite. How does a management team come together and make sure they align their risk appetite? The salesperson who wants to take super risk and the CFO is pulling back the reins. How does that risk appetite come together through the work that you do?
Risk appetite, people say that a lot. What does it mean? In the context of your appetite, using the analogy of eating, where we all like to eat, I have an appetite to eat. But the question is, what is my capacity? How much can I eat? And the old phrase, my eyes are bigger than my stomach, comes into play. And yes, I've got a great appetite, but my capacity to eat is obviously limited in the fact that can I consume it in the time given? So there's a lot of factors around risk appetite. Risk appetite really is the definition, and I use the definition, is the amount of risk the organization is willing to accept in pursuit of a desired financial performance and strategy. So the importance is really in relation to, what is my strategy? What am I trying to achieve? Is it within a given risk parameter? That's your risk appetite. If you raise it to an individual investor, we can either invest $10,000 in a straightforward CD regulated by a bank, or we can put $10,000 in a hedge fund. What is your risk appetite? Well, obviously, your risk appetite is much higher with the hedge fund. It's an unregulated entity. Yes, the returns are great. So it all boils down to, what is your capacity? What's your tolerance? But to answer your question, I think it's a combination of education. And a risk appetite gets banded around, and many people have a different interpretation. How does it relate to what we're trying to achieve? And if you can relate to really the objective of the firm and then really drip it down into the key metric, I think people can say, that's your appetite. I can see where it's being driven, and I can see where it's being driven to.
Where I'm getting from that is strategy is important. So having the team understanding the strategy and on the same page there is where it starts. And then this whole idea, I think it's iterative, working through what that capacity looks like might be judged differently by the different leaders of the company, but eventually through discussions and communication and through a risk, through the work that you do, people can come to grips with a common capacity issue, a common, quote, appetite issue.
I think also, Steve, it challenges, that's the risk appetite, it challenges the assumptions that you make within the company in reaching your objectives. Because obviously, if you are a CFO and you've got your stated goals and objectives and your strategy, the risk appetite really can have a habit of challenging Is that stated objective, stated goal in line with our current culture and thinking and risk? And I think that's what it does. It acts as a, I'm not going to say a break, but it could be. Because otherwise, if we had no risk and no risk appetite at all, we could just do whatever. It is a, I wouldn't say it's impediment because it can be used both ways, but it's just a break that can be applied softly or heavily depending on the organization.
Talked about data and how important data is to a real functioning ERM system. Go a little deeper and talk about where you see the big deficits, where you suggest people fill in on the data side.
I think a lot of use masses of data just for data's sake. And really, to my mind, they should be looking, what is my output? What are the metrics that I'm looking for? What are the key impactful metrics that are going to have a material bearing on my objectives and strategy? And I think we should do reverse engineering. It's, yes, we've got the input, here's all the data and great. What are we producing at the end? So we should be going back rather than going forward with the data inputs and saying, this is what I need to control my business. Going to your point of driving, here's my dashboard. What are the key elements I want to see on my dashboard? You know, I want to see the house, what speed I am, the oil pressure, the tire pressure, all the rest of it. So give me the data that enables me for these metrics to actually work so I can drive the car properly. Don't give me absolutely everything. I don't want to know how cold it is in West Virginia or whatever the case may be. Yes, you've got the data, but that's not doing me any good. I just want the data that drives the car. Here's my dashboard. This is what I need. This is the key data I need. So really foam in on what your key data is, what your key metrics are, and allow the data to actually marry with that, with that philosophy.
Taking it back to your food analogy, you need to know the temperature of the oven and you need to have a clock.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Prashant Sothakal, I do a lot of work with him and he's a data analytics expert. He calls data, he says data in its inert form is a liability. He says you have to make data an asset. He says there's a cost factor, a privacy factor, all kinds of risks in having data. So your point of, and this would be a Stephen Covey side, begin with the end in mind, you know, work backwards, reverse engineer, makes a lot of sense. And getting rid of data you don't need is a risk management issue. You know, Prashant would, you know, he has some really interesting pieces on CFO.University too about data analytics, but in its initial form, data is a liability and you have to make it an asset. And so that's what you're suggesting is make sure you take the most important data points to develop your ERM.
I'm not saying abolish all your data needs because obviously data services, customer services, it costs financial planning. But obviously for risk management, there's a certain amount of data, a slim line of data that you require to drive the metrics. So it's a question of really smart data. And I'm sure AI can help. I know we've all heard about AI can help assimilate that data and say, this is the stream of data I need or require to actually to look to make sure my dashboard and my metrics are working properly.
Risk management is going to benefit by AI a lot. You see the banks using it. Inca. Damon came out from JP Morgan Chase and said, hey, his people are like 80% of his people are using AI. People aren't grandkids 3.5 days a week, and they're going to have a better lifestyle. They're going to make more money because of AI. And I know banks are a lot of your customers.
I just hope we don't exclusively use AI to the detriment of, you know, and I can see it being a curse and a blessing. I can see it being a curse and a blessing because it gets the data, and we talked earlier, into a structured format, but you still need that human intuition to surface. What does it actually mean? AI could tell me absolutely anything. It can come in so many colors, but you need that human intervention. And I remember watching a television program based in Australia, and the guy was running the trading group in the bank, and he was running all on AI and algorithms and all the rest of it. But he had a purpose. His father had been foreclosed by the bank. So his view was, I'm going to down this bank.
Oh, wow.
And he used it so effectively, bankrupt the bank. And no one was any the wiser. And the board said, why did you do it? And he said, 10 years ago, you foreclosed on my father. I've never forgotten it. And my aim was to actually ruin you. And through AI and everything else, you just trusted it. without any objection, the bank is down.
We are in the honeymoon stage of AI, right? Everyone thinks about the, not everyone, but many people think, hey, this is fantastic, but it's going to have its downsides. But that's not what we'll talk about. AI. We'll have a whole nother discussion on AI and risk management in the future. But I want to also talk, you mentioned internal controls are really important. You think about the CFO suite and internal controls, governance, really an important part of how CFOs bring value to their companies. Where do you see the risk management role sitting in most of your clients and in your companies? What role does the CFO and their team play?
I think for small, you know, and I've dealt with a lot of regulated companies. So, you know, the internal controls is really within the risk management area, you know, internal audit, third line of defense, obviously have an independent survey on the controls themselves, but it's been an essentially a risk management role. However, saying that, come up with this phrase, everyone's a risk manager, you know, and that's the philosophy in most firms. Everyone's a compliance officer, everyone's a risk manager. And I think the internal controls for large companies really falls within risk management. But in small ones where you don't have the benefits, you don't have the resources, it's essentially within the CFO's office. And really that's the quasi, the CFO in small businesses is really the quasi chief risk officer. Because no one else on the C-role to fill that.
I see that in the interest. And so we really, a lot of small and medium-sized business owners and executives use CFO.University. And I think that's where your article is becoming so popular. Your whole library. It used to be the banks always had their risk manager, right? The banks have been any highly regulated industry has that. And they're a little bit more familiar with that role. But in the smaller private companies, I think that's a role that's becoming more well-known, more required.
I think there's two things that spur that, Steve. I think within the banks, obviously, the disaster we've had in the U.S. banking industry with two well-known banks falling down, that propels enterprise risk management again to center stage. With every disaster, it's what could have prevented it. If you had an effective enterprise risk management system, it wouldn't have happened. It's driving the bus, but people drive the bus. Whether they're tired, whether they haven't eaten, whether they're grumpy. You can have the best bus in the world, but if the driver's not on top four, accidents can happen. And I think that's propelled enterprise. So any disaster of a nationwide catastrophe elevates enterprise risk management.
About the risk management, let's think about the reporting. So do you have any kind of tips for people on what they should be including and formatting in a risk management report and who they go to and what, does everyone get the same piece of information?
If I was a board member, it's slightly different from actually being hands-on in the business. Because if I was hands-on in the business, I'd get loads of reports, lots of data, making decisions every day. I won't say minute decisions, but if I'm my board member, I want to see the big picture. I want to see the figures that are impactful and material. And so obviously, the reports are going to be much different. Because here, at a board member, I'm an influencer. I'm moving the direction of the company. I'm steering the ship. I need to know what's in front of me. I need to know what the roadmap is, what the obstacles are in front of me. I need to really understand. I do not want to know all the minutiae that goes with it. That's going to drive me to distraction and really deter me from what I'm trying to achieve. So I think it's big picture, small picture when it comes to reporting. And to your question, there's a lot of the CFO world, as I understand, when you're disclosing information, you're a public company or a private company, you've got 10K report, the 10Q. So automatically, there are financial disclosure requirements that you have to report on. And the trick is to actually, how do I improve it for my own need? Because I'm going to have to produce it anyway. So how can I get a trick out of it? How can I get a bit of advantage to use it in a way that, you know, that I can drive the bus better? Then I can drive the tanker to economically or more efficient, because you're having to do it anyway. So why not make a greater job of it? Coming to our cake analogy as well. Why not make a great cake rather than a good cake? It just takes a little bit more thinking and a little bit more understanding to actually go from the ordinary to the extra when it comes to enterprise risk management. That's the difference I see with a sort of a standard operating model, effective risk management, and a better one. It's the better one is really outsmarting.
There's reasons for that, for regulators and people asking for that information. If you can find out a better reason for you, I think that's brilliant. It doesn't even look so onerous anymore. Now it looks like an advantage.
CFO is doing it because it's financial disclosure. He's having to do the 10Q, the 10K. So why doesn't he use it to his advantage? Using this as my benchmark, how do I make it work within my environment? Make life easy for me.
The last element that you talked about had to do with stress testing and scenario planning. We ought to come back to that with your clients. Are most of your clients doing that before you get in there? They're doing scenario planning, stress testing. They have systems, big FP&A groups maybe or whatever that help them with that. What do you find is the norm? And for those companies who don't have those tools in place yet, where do you suggest they start?
Good question. I think for the firms that I'm dealing with, which is the highly regulated financial institutions, it's a matter of industry practice to have stress testing and scenario planning. But for the smaller firm, it's a good practice to have. And you don't need to have the resources. It's all combined now with the new operational resilience. And if I look at disaster planning and contingency planning, it can be wrapped into that. A lot of firms just treat stress testing and scenario planning as we have to do it. There's no benefit the regulators told us to do. But again, use it as a competitive advantage. And it can be done in a small affair as well. Again, ERM is based on looking at assumptions and challenges to our business strategy. Stress testing and scenario planning is the same thing. It's probably at the extreme, but you're still challenging the assumptions of your business objectives. And so it's a wider field, it's a wider playing field. But that doesn't prohibit you from looking at the questions in place and saying, you know, instead of stress testing, why don't we have a scenario where, for example, I put 2 eggs instead of 3 eggs? Is it going to make my cake fluffy or not fluffy? Is it going to make it taste better? Should I add 70 grams of sugar in instead of 50 grams?
Or can I afford the third egg?
Yeah, can I afford the third egg? Should I put chocolate in? And this is all scenario planning. And again, using the cooking analogy, which is like a bit like risk management at the end of the day, because you're going to have an output, which either you don't, a bit like risk management. So I think to answer your question, do you need all these canned stress testing and scenario planning? Not really. For regulated firms, I see it because it's industry-wide, it's regulator-driven. But for the small people, it should come within the planning stage, the what-if scenarios. Yes, we stress things, but you don't have to have, what I'm saying, is a massive playbook.
What's happening, the FP&A groups, so the financial planning analysis groups that normally you're reporting to the CFO, they're doing all the planning and the budgeting and forecasting, and rolling forecasts are becoming commonplace, that piece. Then the next level is this whole idea of stress testing, scenario planning. So we're taking different options if this happens, and being able to do that quickly and easy and simply. Whereas sometimes it's done like a whole new budget, a whole new forecast, and that's what blocks down companies. So I think that having a system in place and a process in place to capture that, we're this far away from it. Anybody who does a forecast or is doing a 12-month rolling forecast, they're so close. There's just another couple steps to make it easier and what isn't a big burden where it's all that 3 days to do one scenario. And I'm encouraged that we're putting in the right tools. And now we need people like you to help us expand the use of those tools beyond just a financial forecast. Now we're getting to the enterprise risk management side. So really appreciate that. John, it's been a whirlwind. You certainly covered a whole lot of topics. I now can bake a great ERM cake.
And drive a good car.
And drive a pretty darn good car, too.
But don't eat and drive at the same time.
That's good risk management advice, I think, there. Yeah. That wraps up today's CFO Talk. Thanks, John, for joining us.
Take care. Thank you very much, Steve. Thanks for having me.
CFO.University is a community of finance, accounting professionals, companies, and trusted advisors committed to the professional development of chief financial officers. Learn more about us at www.cfo.university. Until next time, enjoy, learn, engage.
That wraps up today's CFO Talk.